Hey, everybody, it's Sasha Ann Simons. Just like so many of you, at 1A, we're doing everything we can to help slow the spread of the coronavirus. That means moving as much of our production as we can to our homes. So if you notice the show sounding a little different than what you might be used to, that's why. And we always want to hear your feedback on these episodes. Email 1A at WAMU.org with your comments, questions, and stories. Thanks, and enjoy the show. This is 1A from WAMU in Washington. What can I make with lentils, barbecue sauce, frozen hot dogs, and canned peaches? If you've asked yourself a question like this lately, you're not alone. With many restaurants closed, cooking at home has become both necessary and normal. It's not so easy when ingredients are limited. For some, social distancing means an opportunity to embrace new recipes, tend to sourdough starters, and get creative with pantry staples. For others, though, it's a food nightmare. But one way or another, Americans are learning to adapt to the increasing need to cook at home, including you.
Before COVID-19, we probably ate out at least twice a week. And now eating home every day is a little challenging to come up with meals that both children and my husband will eat.
I have found a wonderful group on Facebook called Quarantine Culinary. It's very inspirational.
We have a challenge in the house right now to use up everything that's in the pantry, everything that's in the freezer, and everything that's in the refrigerator before we go to Publix. So we're getting pretty creative with beans and canned vegetables and soups and canned tomatoes and box pastas.
6 months ago, I switched to a whole foods plant-based diet because of health reasons. And it's been hard to figure out all the recipes. But now I have the freedom to do that because we are home.
Thanks to Shannon from North Carolina, Shelley from Florida, Rick from Florida, and Celeste from Maryland for sharing those messages with us. How are Americans embracing the art of food when some of our food supplies are limited? Joining us now from Hudson, New York, is Allison Roman. She's a columnist for New York Times Cooking and a contributor to Bon Appetit magazine. She's also the author of two cookbooks, Dining In and Nothing Fancy. Allison, welcome.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
A recent article from The Cut called you, quote, the domestic goddess of the apocalypse. You know, people are really gravitating to you for cooking guidance right now, Allison, if they weren't already. How does that feel?
You know, it's bittersweet, I will admit. I'm happy to be known for something. Never thought the word apocalypse would be attached to my descriptor. But,
right.
You know, I think that it's sort of heralding a new era in home cooking. And I think it'll last a lot longer beyond this pandemic, which is great. But kind of a bummer that this is what it took.
Yeah, kind of scary too, right? Now, yeah. You're known for your simple home cooking recipes, but we're in a moment where even simple ingredients can be hard to get. And we're hearing more and more to go to grocery stores less often, even if they're stocked. So what are some of the key pieces of advice that you're recommending right now to people for using what we have, you know, on hand to make meals that will actually taste good and that will actually last long?
I would say being flexible and sort of trusting yourself is really, really important. It's something that I try to talk about generally with home cooking, but right now I find it even more important. So, you know, a recipe calls for an onion, but you only have shallots, or you don't have lemons, but you do have limes, or, you know, things like that where, you know, white bean stew, but you only have chickpeas, and kind of learning what ingredients are contributing to a dish and then feeling free to expand beyond what is suggested to you. Because, you know, right now, a lot of things are unavailable, or as you mentioned, we are advised to not, you know, run out to the store for every whim,
right,
which we are very used to doing. We're totally spoiled when it comes to home cooking. We can get anything we want whenever we want. And right now, I think it's forcing people to be a bit more creative and flexible and patient.
Well, give us some specifics. Tell us a couple of your favorite recipes that you would recommend right now.
I feel like, you know, having a really good solid pantry to begin with will put you in a pretty good place. So when I did, like, you know, a big shop to last about 2 weeks, it was a lot of canned tomato products. So whole peeled tomatoes and tomato paste, and then, you know, assorted legumes like beans and chickpeas and lentils. And they can be dried or canned, whatever you prefer. But I'm a big fan of cooking things like lentils, chickpeas, and beans from dried, because you get sort of this very, very delicious broth after you are done cooking them. So it's like you can have them for soup, and then you can drain them and use the chickpeas for something else. And I think that thinking about cooking a food, like even a roast chicken, and how many different meals you can get from that one thing is really important. So for me right now, the recipes that I find myself cooking are ingredients that I can turn into multiple things without feeling fatigued, because leftovers can be tough.
They can be. And of course, right now, Passover is happening. You published your menu recently for that, which I'm sure some people will be following for their Zoom Seders. What's on that menu?
Yeah, it was really exciting last night to see so many people cooking those recipes. And, you know, when we decided to do that story, obviously none of this had happened. So we had shot the photos and did the video that accompanies the recipes. We did that all weeks before this all happened. So when I was writing the actual article, we did a lot of pivoting to, you know, make sure that we addressed concerns about availability for ingredients and equipment and, you know, all those other things that otherwise might be easy to find this time of year. So there's short ribs, but, you know, if you want to use a stew, a beef stew meat or a half a brisket or something like that, you absolutely could. Calling for chicken fat and things like matzo balls and garlicky carrots can be done with, you know, olive oil or melted butter if you're not keeping kosher. So just trying to make sure that people are cooking something for this holiday was sort of the main point. And it was less about following each recipe to the letter of the law and more just inspiring people to remind themselves that they should be, you know, having one thing to look forward to this week.
Yes, absolutely. A quick tweet here from Eli says, I found that making many fewer larger shopping trips means I have less variety and more often make the same dish two or three times in a week. But that's also an opportunity to become a better cook by perfecting or experimenting with a few recipes in greater depth. Good tweet there from Eli. Now, we asked you, our listeners, what's changed about your cooking habits recently. Here's a message one listener left us for using our app, 1A Vox Pop.
Jordan here from McMinnville, Tennessee. The cooking habits have really changed in my household. I used to do the majority of the cooking, but now that my wife is currently working from home with our two sons, she's been doing the dinner cooking. So it's really nice having her home, and it's also really nice whenever I get home from work, since I am an essential worker delivering to pharmacies and whatnot, I can, you know, have lunch whenever I get home also. So it's really nice. Hope everybody's being safe. I'm trying my best to be safe and not expose my family. I'm almost home, about to strip off and get in the shower.
Thanks, Jordan, for sharing that message with us and for your work as an essential worker delivering to pharmacies and making sure that we get what we need. Allison, for some people, the dynamic of who's cooking meals has changed because of teleworking. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, the people that used to cook are out working, to that caller's point, and then people that have never cooked before because they didn't have the time or desire have found themselves, you know, deep in three meals a day that they're responsible for. So there's been a lot of questions from beginner cooks, and I think a lot of people are surprising themselves with how much they're enjoying it and how much it's sort of changed their eating habits and, you know, delighted themselves with, you know, when you make something, if you've dubbed yourself not a great cook and then you find yourself making delicious dinner, I think that can be really inspiring. And that it's, you know, a bright spot. It's a small thing, but I think that it can provide a sort of boost that we probably all need at the end of our days.
Let's add another voice to the conversation. Joining us from New York is Kwame Onwuachi. He's the executive chef of the restaurant Kith and Kin here in D.C. He's also the author of Notes from a Young Black Chef, a memoir. Kwame, welcome to 1A. Welcome back, I should say.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing well. You've been sharing your culinary wisdom online through your new Instagram Live series, which is super cool. But before we get to that, Kwame, I want to talk about your restaurant, Kith and Kin, for a second. I understand you had to close recently and lay off your staff, which,
yeah,
you know, that,
yeah,
yeah, I can imagine.
Terrible.
You know, but tell us, what was that like?
It was terrible, you know, sitting across from people and telling them that they're losing their job and you don't know when they'd be coming back is definitely the hardest thing I've ever had to do. And it's devastating on the restaurant industry. You know, we're fighting to be represented in the CARES Act, and we just want to continue to do what we love, which is creating experiences for people.
And by the CARES Act, you're talking about that funding, right? The government funding for small businesses, $349 billion. This is an incredibly difficult time for the industry right now, Kwame. And, you know, I understand, though, that you are involved in efforts to help support restaurant workers. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, you know, the U.S. directly employs over 11 million workers that are in the independent restaurant industry. You know, we generate $1 trillion in revenue per year and comprise 4% of the nation's gross domestic product. So, you know, we're a big factor in this, in the economy. And for me, I just want to make sure that I'm speaking for all the independent restaurants, with the Independent Restaurant Coalition, and letting them know that we have a voice and we deserve to be heard.
Mm-hmm. Are you hopeful that you'll be able to reopen Kith and Kin on the other side of this pandemic?
I am hopeful. I am hopeful, okay. You know, but I am also worried about the small mom and pop shops, you know, the immigrant run places, the people that have saved up their entire life savings for this American dream, which is now, you know, falling through the cracks, you know, their fingers like sand. So without proper representation in the CARES Act, I think a lot of restaurants would be at jeopardy. And we just want to get back to work, and we want those restaurants to still be here.
And, you know, speaking of those mom and pop shops and the American dream, you know, Kith and Kin, just let us know, Kwame, it's an Afro-Caribbean restaurant. Is that right?
Yes, yes.
Because you have Trinidadian roots, right?
Mm-hmm. Trini, Jamaican, Nigerian, and Creole roots.
Okay.
So you'll see all of that on the menu there.
Mm-hmm. That's wonderful. Now, Allison, what's your response to what we just heard from Kwame? Very difficult time for the food industry right now.
Yeah, it's actually really intense to watch. I have, you know, so many friends that own restaurants, and I, you know, of course love home cooking, but I spend a lot of time in restaurants. It's a completely different experience than eating at home, and it's such a huge part of my life and my friends' lives and their livelihoods. So it's been pretty devastating to watch people figure out how to navigate this time. And, you know, there's a lot of people doing great things for a lot of different organizations that are getting money, you know, it's getting money into the hands of restaurant workers who need it most, you know, prioritizing health concerns and childcare, everything from medical bills to mental health and things like that. So just figuring out a way to help them raise money, you know, donating to organizations like Feeding America, who've also been involved with restaurant workers. My friend John has this organization, Restaurant Community Workers Foundation, who's been working with Southern Smoke, and they've raised over $1 million in the past 2 weeks or so just to get, you know, the people that are signing up for those things to, you know, faster than unemployment will help them, you know. And I think that it's a really complicated situation, and I'm really hoping that this shakes up the entire restaurant industry, because I'm sure, as Kwame could tell you, it's people, the margins are so, so small, and I don't think people realized how fragile these businesses are. And again, I'm also concerned, I'm concerned for my friends, but I'm also concerned with those restaurants that don't have social media access, that don't have that sort of, you know, cool factor, that are going to struggle and really have a difficult time getting the word out that they need help too.
Speaking of social media, Kwame, despite this crisis, you've found some time to connect to cooking and to your fans online through your new Instagram Live series. It's called Eat Clean While Quarantined. Tell us about that.
Well, you know, I think it's really easy to get engulfed by the anxiety of today's current situation. And people usually equate that with their only comfort that they know, which is food. And in this time, I think it's important to take care of yourself and really watch with you what you ingest and put into your body. So you can just be in good spirits. So I've been eating really, really clean and being very conscious about how I'm eating and how the food that I'm eating reacts to my body. Before
so give
this
us
quarantine.
Some, give us some tips of what you're, you know, for cooking right now, using what you have on hand and make something tasty and long lasting. What would you say?
Well, it depends on what you have. So,
well, true.
You know, Yeah, so I don't know what people have in their pantry, but I would just think of making sure that you're thinking of how much sugar is in your food, how much fat or what kinds of fat are in your food and the carbohydrates you're eating. And then, you know, getting inventive and adding whatever flavorings you want with that.
Now, this isn't the first time that you've cooked on screen, Kwame. You were a contestant on Top Chef in 2015. What has it been like making these videos and sharing your passion with people stuck at home?
It's a little bit different because they're in my home. You know, it's a little bit more intimate than what I'm used to with a bunch of cameras and big production. So it's a learning process for me, but it's fun. You know, I feel like there's a big connection that happens when you let someone into your personal space.
Suzanne emails us. She says, I'm kid-sitting for my 3 grandchildren because my daughter Jennifer, every morning before she goes to work as a palliative care nurse at the hospital, I wanted to do something to keep Jennifer as healthy as possible. So now I cook each evening and set aside a portion for my daughter's lunch. It feels like I can give her something to look forward to each day, even knowing she's going to work where sad news is always on her agenda. What do you say, Kwame, to food sort of being an escape right now from what is really going on in the world?
Yeah, well, that's the beauty of food, right? And that's the beauty of preparing food for someone. You know, one, it's like the only art form that you can actually ingest. But two, it's an act of love. And I feel that it connects people. It shows us how similar we are. So I think that's beautiful. And keep going.
And email here says this, she tweeted, I've been an avid messy home cook for decades and taught myself to cook watching PBS videos as a kid. With the coronavirus, I now have tons of friends reaching out to me asking for cooking advice. It's been fun helping them discover the joy of cooking. I've even been making little online videos. So a woman after your own heart there, Kwame. The most popular one so far has been soft-boiled eggs, which I think is hilarious. Now, we are talking about home cooking during the pandemic with Allison Roman, a columnist for New York Times Cooking and the author of the cookbooks Dining In and Nothing Fancy. And Kwame Onwuachi, the executive chef of the restaurant Kith and Kin here in D.C. He's also the author of Notes from a Young Black Chef, a memoir. Coming up, we will add one more voice to this conversation. And yep, we're going to talk about your sourdough starters. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. You're listening to 1A.
This message comes from NPR sponsor BetterHelp. BetterHelp offers licensed professional counselors who specialize in issues such as isolation, depression, stress, anxiety, and more. Connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online environment when you need professional help. Get help at your own time and your own pace. Schedule secure video or phone sessions, plus chat and text with your therapist. Visit betterhelp.com/1A to learn more and get 10% off your first month.
Do you talk about the news with your friends, your family, or perfect strangers? Get the facts you need to be up to speed on this busy news cycle on the 1A News Roundup. Find the podcast in your feed every Friday.
In Cherokee Nation, a feud has been simmering for more than 180 years.
I always joke that the Ridges and the Rosses were like the Montagues and the Capulets. We've been fighting for so long that people don't really know why, but in Cherokee, we know why.
That's next week on Code Switch from NPR.
Back now to our conversation with Allison Roman, a columnist for New York Times Cooking and the author of the cookbooks Dining In and Nothing Fancy, and Kwame Onwuachi, the executive chef of the restaurant Kith and Kin here in D.C. He's also the author of Notes from a Young Black Chef, a memoir. Let's add one more voice, as promised, to this conversation. Joining us from Washington, D.C. is my colleague, Gabe Bullard. He's a senior editor here at WAMU. But he's here today wearing a different hat. He also happens to be a fantastic baker. Hi, Gabe. Welcome back to 1A.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Now, Allison, I want to jump to you for a moment. You know, thinking of this time and just food in general, you know, it is necessary for survival. And cooking can also be a really therapeutic activity. How does cooking make you feel? And what do you make of this new energy around home cooking that we're seeing?
Well, it's always been something that has de-stressed me. It's something that I think that I started doing because I am an anxious person and it gave me something to do. And I feel like if I'm not doing something or making something, I spiral out of control. And so cooking was a really great way to not only do something, but have, you know, something to show for it when I was done. And I realize that that is not the experience for a lot of people. A lot of people feel the opposite, actually, that it stresses them out. It makes them feel more anxious. But I think sort of understanding that it is a practice and that there is room for failure and there's room for adapting and, you know, it doesn't have to be perfect and it doesn't have to be exactly what you thought it was going to be. It can be something different. And I think it, you know, people are learning a lot about that process. And
right.
It's always brought me a ton of joy, and that's why I do it. And I think that some people are rediscovering that or discovering it for the first time right now out of necessity.
Yeah. What about you, Kwame? What feeling do you get when you're in the kitchen, and what do you make of this new energy around home cooking that we're seeing?
Well, it really makes me fall back in love with cooking, you know, and reminds me of why I got into doing this. I'm having a lot of fun with it at home. I think this is the most I've cooked at home since I was a child, probably.
Wow.
And yeah, it's
even
cool.
You, a chef.
Prepping. Yeah.
It's funny hearing you say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I cook outside. You know, I cook in the restaurant all the time. That's the last thing I want to do when I get home. But now, you know, I'm prepping out, I'm marinating things 2 days in advance. And it's great. I love the energy around it. I'm happy to see more people doing it.
What are some of your favorite recipes right now, Kwame?
I made curry goat the other day. That was really, really good. I made an El Pastor, like taco situation that was great, and
ooh, nice.
Braised oxtails as well. So,
ooh,
yeah, it's been fun.
That's my favorite. I'm Jamaican, so that's my favorite dish.
Yeah, I made oxtails and rice and peas. Yeah, super
ooh.
Good. Super
oh, wow. Good. Sounds amazing. Now, we heard from a lot of people who've decided to take up baking while stuck at home. Mm-hmm. Here's a mashup of what two listeners left in our inbox.
I'm Barb Murphy in Rochester, New York.
I'm Rochelle from Oxford, Ohio.
Last night I did something fun. I baked something from a 1939 cookbook of my mother's, and I made Dixie molasses wafers.
Never baked before in my life, but saw a great loaf of bread online and was very envious of it. It's a no-knead recipe from the New York Times.
While the cookies baked, I looked through the book and I saw my mother's handwriting. A woman who lived through the Spanish flu but never talked about it.
I have since started a Facebook group called Bread Porn, which I did change to Bread Envy to make a little PG, and just enjoying cooking.
Thank you, Barb and Rochelle, for sharing your stories with us. Gabe, anxious to bring you into this conversation. Baking and making bread is huge right now for some reason. Now, we know it's Passover, so some of the people who've gotten into it might be opting out for a week. But Gabe, you're here because you've been baking bread for a long time, well before any pandemic. Tell us a little bit about this phenomenon that we're seeing right now.
Yeah, I've been doing it for a while, but for about 8 years, I've been making bread every week pretty regularly. And
oh, wow.
I think in the last 3 weeks, I've heard from more people wondering sort of how to get into it than I did in the previous 8 years. I think a lot of people are just kind of turning to it. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. I think a good loaf of bread looks really good if you want to share it. It's simple, but it's still pretty impressive. And then also just for making it, it takes some time. It takes some patience. It takes some diligence, but it's not something that's going to necessarily have you in the kitchen all day. Mm-hmm. It's something you could do if you're working from home. You can kind of take a break and tend to it every so often. And it's just a huge upgrade from a lot of sort of the bagged bread that you would get in a store. So it's mm-hmm. it's a relatively simple, nice looking step you can take to upgrade something that you're eating.
Bread making is something I've never tried. I don't know why, but it intimidates me for some reason. What first drew you to it 8 years ago, Gabe? How does it make you feel?
My wife gave me a book just because I had been interested in, I had already been baking and cooking and everything and was interested in making better bread. And started from there, and then just kind of fell down the rabbit hole for years and years after that. And it is really, it does help relieve anxiety. I'm also a very anxious person, and having a starter to kind of tend to, and then when I'm making bread, having dough that I need to go check on every so often, really does kind of give me a place to put some of my more anxious thoughts and everything. But then also, it's nice to, bread can kind of present a little bit of a puzzle. There's precision to it, just like with baking, but, you know, depending on what happens, maybe it's rising a little bit differently, maybe the dough consistency isn't the same, and it gives you a sort of a chance to maybe solve a little puzzle with it. And the result of solving it successfully is a great loaf of bread. So
yeah,
sort of a win all around.
Absolutely. And I've tasted your croissants. They are fantastic. You're in good company. We have a tweet from Lindsay. She says, I've been baking bread with my daughters, ages 3 and 6, as a science lesson. The first loaf did not work out. We killed the yeast, which we call little monsters. She put that in quotes. The second loaf worked much better, and we had fun comparing the two in size, texture, and taste. So she sort of made a good out of the bad there with her children. Curious, Gabe, you know, you said that you had been doing this sort of weekly anyway over the past 8 years, but has your bread making routine changed at all now that you are working from home? And tell us what you've done, what you've baked in the recent weeks.
Yeah, I've really sort of quadrupled down on bread each week because having
two loaves a week now, or
or more, yeah, three or four, depending on how it goes. It's a combination of how much we're eating it at home, and then also just how nervous I am given everything going on working in news. So so it varies based on news cycle and based on how we're cooking. But I think we're just eating a lot more of the bread. So I've turned to using a higher percentage of whole wheat flour, also because that's just what we had more of in the kitchen as well. So I'm sort of using through that. But yeah, I think that's the big part of it, is trying to get more whole grain into it. And also just, we're eating it more regularly because we're here for three meals, whereas we might be at home, you know, for one or two meals on a typical day. So we've been going through a lot of it. And croissants, that's next. I got to get the shaping right.
My
and...
favorite. You better send me a batch. That is my favorite of yours. Now, again, what do you want to say to people who feel like me, intimidated? Because I just don't know where I'd begin. You know, it sounds like it's difficult. Is that the case?
It's not. I think that's one thing I was kind of thinking about, is a lot of times I would make a loaf of bread to bring to, you know, somebody's house if they were having people over or something, and ask to bring some food. And there's a lot of oohs and ahs because maybe it looks really nice, but I'd always sort of said, and maybe being a little Midwestern, of just, oh, it wasn't anything fancy, it's not that tough, and, you know, you get used to it and everything. So I'm glad people are kind of discovering that it's not this sort of insurmountable challenge. I think for people starting, though, you know, find a technique that's going to be right for you. If you don't want to worry about starting and tending to a starter, don't, if you have the ingredients not to. But just kind of start steadily. Don't worry if your bread doesn't look like everything on Instagram. That's fine. You could still put butter on it and it'll taste pretty good, as long as you don't totally burn it or keep it raw. And then this is kind of nerdy, but keep a log of, you know, what you're putting in, how the bread is doing. I've, for a long time, kept a notebook in the kitchen just to kind of write down, you know, this is how much flour and water and salt I've used. Here's how it turned out. Here's how I baked it, that sort of thing. And it kind of gives you something to look back to kind of see how it goes. And then the final thing, if you do go for a starter, you know, my DMs are full of pictures of people's starters and they're all looking great, but that's just, that's the first step. I think the rest that you need to do is, you know, there's kneading, there's folding, there's the temperature you're cooking. There's a lot of other factors that go into it. So be happy if your starter's doing well, but then, just be mindful of the other steps.
You're really changing our perception of what types of photos appear in our DMs now, Gabe. Allison, a good email here has come in from Erica in Indianapolis. She says, what about kids cooking at home? Our kids have been spending hours cooking at home. Tell us some ideas besides sweets that are fun for kids to make.
Well, I don't have any kids, but I do have friends that have kids, and I've definitely been around them when we're making dinner. And what I've noticed, and again, this is as a non-parent, but what I've noticed is that kids just like to be involved in pretty much anything. So I feel like, you know, if it feels like a task that is age appropriate, meaning, you know, if they can hold a knife or not, then you should involve them. If that's just like picking herbs from the stem or mixing together lemon juice and yogurt for a sauce or, you know, picking stems off a green bean or something, you know, I think there's a lot of activities that you can give to a young person of any age. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like involving them in any process is going to hopefully, you know, start good habits and encourage them to want to do it more as they get older and associate it with something fun rather than a chore. I think so much of why adults don't like cooking is because they think it's a chore. They think it's a burden. They think it's, you know, something that they have to do. But if you kind of train, is that the right word? I don't know. I don't have kids, but
teach.
If you encourage them, you know, to think of it as something fun and joyful, then I think that that builds really good habits for the rest of their lives.
We'll be back right after a short break. This is 1A.
When the economy goes haywire and you need a podcast to turn to, Planet Money is here for you.
Are we already in a recession?
There's no question that we are about to enter a period of substantial slowdown in the economy.
Listen to NPR's Planet Money, emergency podcasts whenever the news demands it.
This is 1A. Here's a tweet from Olivia. She says, I would love you to touch on how difficult this can be for folks with histories of disordered eating. It's not just about eating clean. It's also about staying mentally well and maintaining a healthy relationship with food. Can you comment on that, Allison?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very intense topic and something that I've been doing some reading on. I've read some articles on that. And I think it's like anything right now that people have difficulty with, especially mentally and emotionally, because this is an intense time. People are already on edge. Their routines are thrown off base. They don't have the physical support of their friends and family. I think remember to like food is fuel and that you need it to live and survive and be healthy and stay strong. And I think it starts with shopping. I think filling your house with the kinds of foods that not only you enjoy eating, but that are good for you. I think that for me, I sort of allow myself to buy the one thing or two things that I feel like, yeah, are not great for me, but really bring me joy. They really comfort me and I love them and I love to eat them. And then I balance that out with things that I know are really good for my body.
Now, Gabe gave some great advice to me and others who are intimidated with baking. But Kwame, you know, what advice do you give to people who don't like cooking or if they self-identify as a bad cook? How can they embrace the new normal? What would you say?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. I mean, have fun with it. Cooking is, you're doing something for sustenance, you know, so just have fun with it. Don't put too much pressure on yourself. It's the same thing I tell my cooks, you know, it's food at the end of the day. No one's on the operating table. So create something. If you don't like it, you don't like it, you know, and try again. And, you know, like Gabe said, take note of it so you know what not to do next time.
Mm-hmm. And Gabe, the ingredients involved with bread making, make that clear for us, because a lot of people are mentioning flour and yeast shortages.
Yeah. I mean, flour is the key thing. There are a lot of recipes out there. If you can't eat gluten or can't eat flour for certain reasons, there's alternatives that are out there. But yeah, we've been seeing the flour and yeast shortages. If you can get some flour, go for it. I would advise against hoarding because a lot of people might need it. But fortunately, we had lucked out before the shutdown started, had just kind of picked up some new flour. Because we make so much, tend to buy a fair amount at a time and have just kind of been going through that. But wherever you can find it and just make sure to be safe and mindful of what others need.
Tara tweets to us. She says, I've been making and eating granola. I never liked store-bought types, but my homemade is exactly the way I like it. Lots of nuts and honey and maple syrup, and I can eat it all day. Thanks for that tweet, Tara. Now, Kwame, for those looking to help restaurant industry right now, quick recommendation from you?
Go to saverestaurants.com.
How they can help?
Yes, go to saverestaurants.com. There's plenty of information on how you can get involved in making sure restaurants are here when this is all said and done.
Kwame Onwuachi is the executive chef of the restaurant Kith & Kin here in D.C. Allison Roman is a columnist for New York Times Cooking. And Gabe Bullard, senior editor at WAMU. Thanks, all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Off, it's time to. You're welcome. Before we take off, time to do what we call the AOK, your daily act of kindness. These are stories that we hear from you about moments of kindness and tenderness that you're seeing during this crisis. Here's Audrey outside of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
I just want to give a thanks to all the people who were kind to my son. He's a postal carrier, and they've been so kind as to give him surgical masks for his protection. They've also given him money and cards, and I appreciate that. And I just want to thank them for everything that they've done for him. And God bless each and every one of you. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Audrey, and a big thanks to your son from us here at 1A. Postal carriers, delivery workers, everyone's still out making sure that we get what we need. Thanks so much. What acts of kindness and empathy have you seen in recent days? Tell us your story at 855-236-1212. This conversation was produced by Catherine Fink and edited by Matthew Simonson. To learn more about them and the rest of the team, you can visit the website at the1a.org. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. Until we meet again, I'm Sasha Ann Simons. Thank you so much for listening. This is 1A.